The Man Booker Prize for Fiction is something we American writers don't have to worry about not getting. The winning author has to be a citizen of a current or former British Commonwealth country. But it's got traction here. After Julian Barnes won last year for his novel The Sense of an Ending, it became a U.S. bestseller, and it's just out in paperback. I spoke with Barnes a few years ago at a National Book Foundation event, just after his novel Arthur and George had been published.
Is this big enough for you or not?
Not quite.
I don't want to write a Dickensian novel. I want to write a Barnesian novel.
Well, which gets to my next question. What is a Barnesian novel? Your books are so breathtakingly diverse in genre and tone and form, it is hard to say what one is. They clearly all have, and I'll leave France aside until a little later again, but all of them, I guess, could be described as novels of ideas, and none of them, so far as I know, are humorless. How would you describe a Julian Barnes novel in 25 words or less? Or make it 50.
Do I get a prize?
You do.
I don't know. One of the happy things about being a writer is you don't have to describe yourself, really, or you don't have to look at yourself in the way that other people look at you. You don't have to think, or at any rate, I find it harmful and unhelpful to think about my work, let alone that one French word I will never use of myself, my oeuvre. as any sort of totality, you know. I can only write one book at a time, and I can only write that book by forgetting all the previous ones that I've written. And I'm sort of aware, because people keep telling me that my books are different from one another, and I don't know where I'm going next, except it's not where I've just been. But that's sort of how I am. I think I'm going to avoid your question.
But, well, you haven't entirely. And is your impulse to keep yourself interested? Is that's why you...
No, it's how I've always... I mean, you know, when I started off, I thought part of writing more than one novel is teaching yourself how to write a novel. And so I had what I thought was a sort of plan... that's to say, my first novel was going to be in the first person. My second novel was going to be in the third person. My third novel was going to be from the point of view of a woman. Parts one and two worked. Then part three got sidelined for a bit because Flaubert's Parrot came along. So part three went into part four. But this was as much of a sort of... But, a plan as I ever had, but that involved...
That's quite a plan. That's quite a strategy.
Well, I don't think it's... I don't think I could exactly sell it for much money to to aspiring writers. But at the start, I was sort of, you know, aware that you want to learn to be a writer, which involves doing lots of different things. But it's obviously much more than that in my case. I can't explain it because I don't want to look at it, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm. It's why many artists don't wish to go to psychiatrists, I guess.
Yes, it? I mean, John Cleese went to one, and he explained exactly why he had this impulse to be funny, and so he stopped.
we don't want you to stop, so I won't pursue this any further. Flaubert's Parrot, you also have published a book of stories called Cross Channel about...
France.
You have a book of essays called Something to Declare that is about France.
Mm-hmm.
You translated a French writer's account of his syphilis called In the Land of Pain. You now, I see, have done radio shows about Rudyard Kipling's love of France.
Mm. Yeah.
What compels you?
Oh, I want to irritate George Bush. It was the first country I went to. My parents were French teachers. Unlike children today, in those days, it was quite rare for children, even in adolescence, to go abroad.
Even just across the channel?
Even just across the channel, yes. I mean, I remember the incredible exoticism of a boy when I was in the sixth form, so it would have been about, I would have been 16, say. And I can, it was such an exotic thing to do, and obviously showed his parents were so fantastically rich and cosmopolitan, that I can remember the boy's name. It was John Marsilia, and he went to America. This would have been in 1962 or so. And he came back with a sheepskin-lined jacket and a copy of The Carpetbaggers. Amazing what America was full of, we thought. But I went to France with my parents on on an annual holiday from the ages of about 13 to 17 or 18 or so. I didn't go to another foreign country until I was 18, 19, something like that. But this was completely normal. So France was my primary exotic. It was the place where things were different. It was also the place where that difference made me think about my own country. If my parents had been Italian teachers, I would have been writing Dante's Gerbil or something like that, rather than...
There's an idea.
Yeah. It's strange, you know, life is a set of forking paths, isn't it, as someone must have said.
Well, I know you haven't written, as far as I know, Dante's Gerbil, but I discovered in my research that you have written several novels that I doubt many people in this room have heard of, including a book called Duffy and a book called Going to the Dogs.
That's right, yes.
Tell me about that, this secret life.
It's only secret because no one ever bought them. I had a secondary literary persona as a thriller writer when I started off. I used to read a lot of crime fiction, and my first novel, called Metroland, took me, I think, about 8 years to write, which... You might, reading it, think rather unnecessary period of time to spend on it. But then, you know, there's no easy way of becoming a writer, or there wasn't then. I don't think there is still. And that's how long it took me. When I'd finished it, I thought, oh, well, why don't I try and write a thriller? And I wrote one called Duffy in 2 weeks. And then the following year, I wrote another one, and it took me 2.5 weeks. And eventually, I wrote four. And then I found that they all had sort of running characters. And at first, this was a great liberation. And then secondly, it was a constriction, and that actually I thought, oh God, when I invented this character Duffy, realized he didn't like going abroad, so I can't. You know, he's afraid of flying or something. So he can't. You create a character, you give him various characteristics, and then you're stuck with them if you don't think ahead.
And then you throw him over the falls.
That's the trouble. So I threw him over the falls. No, I mean the fact was that I was writing thrillers and I was writing novels under my own name, and everyone assumed that my thriller writing was supporting my, in quotes, art novels like Flaubert's Parrot. But in fact, Flaubert's Parrot was supporting my crime fiction because they really didn't sell very well, the Dan Kavanagh novels. So I stopped writing them.
Speaking of that, do you think consciously do you today think of, oh, I'm writing this one more for the market, I'm writing this one more for the art, for the esteem?
No, because you see, when I started, I mean, you never know how a book is going to do, as proved by the, well, I mean, they may not have been very good thrillers. Maybe that's why they didn't have much of a following. But
Flaubert's Parrot may not have looked like the most commercial book in the world when you wrote it.
Flaubert's Parrot has sold very well over the years, I like it very much for that reason, if none other. But when I was writing it and trying to describe it to people, I once made the mistake of describing it to the British novelist Kingsley Amis, who I knew at that time. And it was a mixture of furious boredom and an apoplectic rage came into it. I found myself saying, well, it's sort of upside down sort of novel. It's about Flaubert in France. And he was sort of going, then I tried it on my publisher and got blank looks back. So I was sort of rather surprised that it actually did what it did. But, you know, you just write the book that you want to and you have to, and then you see how it goes. To say a few of my 50 words about myself, I'm very interested in form and what form can do, and I think that some novelists are inclined to neglect form and to think that form is easy, or that form consists of starting the story at the beginning and going on till it ends. The form of the novel is just like the form of an anecdote, but larger, you know. And I think there's lots more to it than that.
The question about the proper place of fiction and nonfiction, whether memoirs should be allowed to be fictionalized. Of course, I mean, you've written novels like The History of the 10.5 Chapters, which combine very clearly and pointedly nonfiction with embedded in your fiction. Do you have an opinion about whether or not memoirs should be true?
I mean, a lot of autobiographers are liars anyway. I mean, I remember giving up reading Benvoluto Cellini's autobiography because I thought, this isn't true. You know, you're just a blagger, you know. You may be a great goldsmith and a great silversmith, but I don't believe this. I gave up Casanova's memoirs for the same reason. I thought, I don't believe a word of this, you know. Get away with you, I thought.
So relativism has a long, venerable history.
So I think, yes. But I do think, you know, I think that if you do write an autobiography, you have a moral duty to tell... obviously, you can't, if you're writing about your childhood, you're going to get things wrong, or people are going to disagree with you. Book I'm writing at the moment, I've been emailing my brother, who's 3 years older than me, about things in my early childhood, our early childhood. And we have completely different memories. But it's made worse, of course, by the fact that he's a philosopher. When I rebuked him for something. He said, but you see, I think all memories are false. He said. So this is his starting point. So rather difficult for us to see eye to eye completely about things.
Is it a memoir you're writing, but, or is this research for a
novel? Oh, no, I'm not telling you what it is. I'm sorry. It's something different. It's a new departure. It's called A New Departure.
You're teasing man.
But, of course, you can't remember dialogue exactly. The dialogue that you know, when we retell stories, we improve the dialogue all the time. And our best stories are often the stories that we have most worked on and made into stories. But I do think that if you are writing a memoir or an autobiography, you have a moral duty to the reader to... make it as truthful as you possibly can. And that, you know, I'm an Orwellian in this respect. Of course, 100% objective truth is impossible, but you know, if we get to 60%, it's better than 50 and much better than 40. You know, we should crank up those percentages as much as we possibly can. I should have gone on Oprah.
Exactly. I mean, hear, hear.
I pray to her nightly.
Julian Barnes is the winner of last year's Man Booker Prize for his novel The Sense of an Ending, which is just out in paperback.